Blog Talk Radio.
Rise, let us be on our way. There will be days, there will be days.
Hello, this is Joseph G. with Rum Radio. It might be strange for your the Sober Couch folks. It's now Sober Couch Network Radio. We've incorporated some of the other shows that were on Blog Talk Radio. We have Sober Couch Thursday nights with Sue Ellen and Sarah. And then we have Oliver on Half Measures Room on Wednesday night. And Joseph G. Saturday, Joseph G. and Harold Saturday nights at 9. Hopefully we'll be adding some other shows so someone will be able to interact at different venues, a little different flavors. We'll get out the word. Supporting one and each other in recovery. Wanted to thank WNAH Radio in Nashville, Tennessee, who sends us out live over the airways in Nashville, Tennessee, and Kentucky, and I think parts of Arkansas. And they do this as a public service announcement because they appreciate their sponsors, and I know Hoyt and Tony up there, they love their audience. They're really great people up there in Nashville. And thanks again, Hoyt and Tony. I wanted to acknowledge Recovery Today magazine. It's recoverytoday.net. They posted one of the stories from rumradio.org. If Bill was the sail, Dr. Bob was the anchor. I think it's a great little story seeing how the two most unlikely of men got together and put together a fellowship of the spirit that's helped millions, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people worldwide from the quicksand disease of addiction. So that's recoverytoday.net, and you can get it for free on the internet, or you could subscribe to the hard copy paper. That's Greg L. up there. Today's Rum Radio's 2-year anniversary. Yay, we're 2 years old today. 9,
yay,
10, 11.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And that is Harold. Harold B.
Hi, everybody.
Our co-host.
This is B. Here to share my experience, strength, and hope, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. I think that comes. And there was, and we'll be doing interviews. We were invited to do some interviews live at the Big Texas Rally for Recovery in Austin. At Saturday, October 1st, 2011, at the State Capitol Grounds. It's a coffee rally. No, it's a State Capitol Grounds on the South Steps. It's between 4 and 7 o'clock. If you want any additional announcement, it's www.texasrecovers.org or call Paula G. at 512-260-9609. That should be a lot of fun. I'm originally from Austin by way of Brooklyn. I love Texas, so I don't mind saying that. Texas is a great state. Actually, we should be our own country, but I guess some people don't. Like, we had a retail business, and people would say, where are you from? I said, I'm from New York. I says, well, let's not forget the New York State flag flies at the Alamo. There was a New Yorker at the Alamo, so we kind of fought our way down.
That's great. Well, and Governor Rick Perry is making, a couple of years ago, that idea came up, and so now he's really receiving a lot of flack for his comments about seceding from the Union.
Yeah, thank you. Half Measures Room is on. Oliver, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. How's everybody doing?
Oliver's going to be good. Oliver's got Half Measures Room. It's a great Facebook page. I know Oliver. I was at the Hope. It's so I don't know. We've guessed around 10 years ago. It's probably a little bit more than that, but thereabouts. And it's one of the joys of recovery to see somebody walk in a hopeless state of mind and body, and then and flourish and grow because of the spiritual recovery that is envisioned and enlivened in the 12-step program. So welcome, Oliver. Tonight we were going to discuss something that we don't really hear, and I didn't even know about this phenomenon until just recently, as of late. It's called THC, the disease of THC. How do I get to pull this back up?
THIQ.
Okay, oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm trying to manipulate the computer while I'm doing this. THIQ and the disease everything that used to be a sin is now a disease. Bill Mailer. Are you familiar with THIQ at all, Oliver?
No, I'm not. I was actually curious about that when I saw the topic for tonight.
All right, let me give you some background on this. And this is going to answer some questions. I've had some people say that this isn't true. Now, this is from 2003. As far as I can tell, now, if there's anybody out there that has controversial or contradicting information about the validity of these statements or this information, please let us know. As far as I've been able to discover, this is a fact. But, you know, facts change as the world goes from flat to round. So, THIQ was discovered in brains of alcoholics in Houston, Texas, by a scientist research for her study. She needed fresh human brains and used bodies of homeless winos who had died during the night and were picked up by Houston police in the morning. She discovered in the brains of those chronic alcoholics a substance that is closely related to heroin. This substance, known to scientists, is called, oh, I don't know if I can pronounce it, tetrahydrosoquinoline, or THIQ. That's why they had to put initials on it. And it reminded me, Dr. Frankenstein, whose brains did you retrieve, Igor? It was Abby Normal's brain. So these were winos who had died during the night, and all of a sudden during the autopsy, she found this residual of heroin. When a person shoots heroin into their body, some of it breaks down and turns into THIQ. The alcohol. So how did the THIQ get there? Scientists like nothing more than a mystery. These were winos. These were alcoholics. Their drug of choice was alcohol. And usually winos get to the point where hard liquor is too hard for them to digest, and it's more expensive, and they're at the end of the rope. So wine is usually sufficient to their needs. For them to come up with the wherewithal of needles and kits and all that is not really something they normally would do. Right? Is that anybody's experience with that?
That's absolutely true. It's so much easier for them to go in and either purchase a bottle of wine or just slip it under their overcoat and steal a bottle of wine. It's way easier than to try to get needles or heroin, and it's more consistent, really. It's in its own little way, it's less dangerous. I mean, alcohol is the most dangerous substance on the planet, as more people die from alcohol overdose than all the other drugs put together. But my experience is that downtown, the winos and people living under bridges would grab wine. It was simple and it was possible.
Right. So this is what they were concluding, that these were, you know, they didn't find tracks in their arm because they were looking for this evidence to see where this residual from heroin came from. When the normal adult drinker takes in alcohol, it is very rapidly eliminated at the rate of about 1 hour. The body first converts the alcohol into something called acetaldehyde. You familiar with that one?
Yes.
This chemical is very toxic, and if it were to build up inside us, we would get violently sick and could die. But Mother Nature helps us to get rid of this acetaldehyde very quickly. She sufficiently changes it into a couple of more times into carbon dioxide and water, which is eliminated through kidneys and lungs. That's what happens to normal drinkers. It also happens with alcoholic drinkers, but with alcoholic drinkers, something additional happens. I knew it. As a drunk, I'm immediately entitled to the bonus plan. When Virginia discovered in Houston, it has been extensively confirmed since, and alcoholic drinkers, a very small amount of poisonous acetaldehyde is not eliminated. Instead, it gets into the brain, goes into the brain. There, through a very complicated biochemical process, it winds up as THIQ. Wow. How do you like that one, huh? How many times have you gone to the bar and asked for a scotch and a THIQ chaser?
There you go. And the thing is that the science has now made such great advances with brain imaging, and this doctor did so through autopsies and actual chemical analysis of the brain, but they can also see a lot of information about what happens to the brain when we put alcohol in there with brain imaging. The person doesn't have to be dead. We can see what happens to the brain as they process the alcohol and they're alive.
Researchers found the following. THIQ is manufactured in the brain and only occurs in the brain of the alcoholic drinker. Oh, wow. It is not manufactured in the brain of the normal social drinker of alcohol. So we got a bonus going. THIQ has been found to be highly addictive. It was tried in experimental use with animals during the Second World War when we were looking for a painkiller less addicting than morphine. THIQ was pretty good painkiller, but couldn't be used on humans. It turned out to be much more addictive than morphine. Experiments have showed that certain kinds of rats cannot be made to drink alcohol. I've seen some of those Al-Anon rats pour out a perfectly good bottle of booze just to get cheesy with me. I like to put in those little humor bits in there, tongue-in-cheek kind of deal. So, Oliver, this is kind of your, have you?
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up there for a second. I didn't hear.
I'm that boring, huh? Did you doze off?
No. I just didn't hear the last part of what you said there.
No. I was going to say, had you heard of it? You haven't heard any of this before, have you?
No, but I do remember when I was in drug treatment, they were talking about how drugs and alcohol affected the brain, and there were certain chemicals that our brain was receiving, that we were introducing these chemicals into our head, and then when we didn't have them, when we would stop using or drinking, that's what the cravings came from, was our brain was used to these chemicals. So I mean that makes sense, and I always thought that for a while that's what I was doing was changing something in my head. I really think that I burned something up in there and conditioned my head to the point to where it needed these chemicals that I was giving my body. So yeah, I mean that makes a lot of sense about the THQ. This is really interesting, the science of alcoholism.
Yeah, it's a little different tack than we usually take, but I think it's really worth the investigation because Justin sent this to me, and he had it for a while, and he's got real good recovery. He was my original co-host, and he sent this to me, and it was like, wow, you know, I'm going on 15 years. I never heard of this before. And as we go on with this, you're going to see it makes a lot of sense of some of the phenomenon that we experience after 5 and 7 years in recovery. In the meantime, I'd like to take a minute to give you a call-in number. It's 760-825-0940. Again, 760-825-0940. If anybody had experience or opinions.
Now, isn't the call-in number 347-202-0373.
Oh, I'm sorry. Which? Yeah. No. Let's see. Which is it?
That's
213.
The number
I think I gave. 213. No.
The number I called in on is 347-202-0373.
Huh? What'd you call in, Oliver?
I used Skype, so I don't know what number. Let me look real quick. Yeah, I use Skype to call in. So.
Oh, okay. Well, it's weird. I think I'm getting the same number I had with Rum Radio, but I'm on the Sober Couch panel.
Yeah, I'm
1-3-3-2-5 request 4.
We can give out both numbers and see maybe a caller will give us some feedback about when they called in on.
All
so
right.
The one
that's
I called in on again was 347-202-0373.
Hmm.
There we go.
Well. All right. Well, I don't know. I don't know why that number. I might have called in the Show and Sober Couch. Maybe I called in on the, I don't know, man. I'm confused. I don't know. Oh, well. We might not even be on, we might be on Rum Radio for all I know. All right, let's see what we got here.
I used Skype to call in on the Sober Couch show, so.
All right. Yeah, it's just my switchboard looks strange. I mean, I believe it's the same numbers on the Rum Radio. So that's why it's and I know Harold called in on the Sober Couch Network.
Yeah, I called in.
All right. Well.
But anyway, back to what Oliver said, we do get the sense that we've burned something out in the brain. And that is the science has now caught up and is able to verify that indeed we are, with our addiction, we are burning out the receptor sites in the brain. And because the receptor sites are burned up, that's why we need more of the substance that we're talking about. And that's what produces that sense of craving, the urges, the triggers, and so forth. It's all because the brain has been altered by our use of substances, our abuse of substances. And so a lot of people describe it as always chasing that first high because the receptor sites immediately begin to burn up. That's why we can never get that first high again. Same thing occurs with alcohol. And actually, as last month we had a program about the effects on the brain of viewing porn being very similar to cocaine, and that's because the receptor sites are burned out also. So it all relates to tonight's topic, THIQ, which is what's it seems to be the residual chemical left behind when the receptor sites are affected. And we've always said, oh, we're burning out cells in the brain. Well, that's scientifically accurate. We are burning out cells in the brain, and when they burn out, they leave this chemical, right, which makes our recovery difficult. So the end result is the same anyway. We've got to do other things instead of drink, and we've got to start to think about our spiritual condition.
Experiments have shown that certain kinds of rats cannot be made to drink alcohol. I haven't met any rat that wouldn't drink alcohol, but I'm sure there's some out there. Put in a cage with very weak solution of vodka. Any vodka drinkers out there? And water. These rats refuse to touch it. Wow. They were scotch drinkers. They will literally thirst to death before they agree to drink alcohol. However, if you and put a minute quantity of THIQ into the rat's brain, one quick injection, the animal will immediately develop a preference for the alcohol over water. Studies then with monkeys are close animal relative in medical terms. If you knew my uncle, you'd say it's even closer than that, shows the following. Once the THQ is injected into a monkey's brain, it stays there. You can keep the monkey dry off alcohol for 7 years. Brain studies show that THIQ remains in place in the brain for 7 years. So that
Wow.
goes along with the saying, that goes along in the saying in the program, the monkey might be off my back, but the circus is still in town.
There you go. Exactly.
A normal drinker changes the alcohol into the acetaldehyde, and then it changes most of it into carbon dioxide and water, which is at the end kicks out through the kidneys and lungs. However, the alcoholic's bodies won't kick all these chemicals out. The alcoholic's brain holds a few bits back and transforms them into THIQ. As the THIQ is accumulated in the brain of the alcoholic at the same point, maybe sooner, maybe later, the alcoholic will cross over a shadowy line into a whole new way of living. Any guys want to mention about the shadowy line we cross over?
Well, go ahead, Oliver.
Yeah, I know. I've crossed many lines in my time. I really like the talk about the rats. You know, I think drinking kind of turned me into a rat. I always felt like a rat when I was trying to sneak a drink or two. shadowy line. I mean, I'm thinking about that point of no return. You know, like the big book talks about, you know, how there was a point in time when we were able to, we probably were able to stop on our own, but we just really didn't want to, and we didn't know when, at what point in time it was, but there was a point in time where we did cross this line where we just became unable to live alone, and it became a necessity rather than a wish to continue drinking.
Yes, and from my experience, it was connected with the times when I decided to drink alone and in secret, kind of drinking to get back to normal.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on about that. When I began to drink in secret, I think it's just that natural progression when it became from alcohol use to alcohol abuse. And I imagine if we look into this science of alcoholism, I imagine if we look at the statistics, people that started drinking when they were younger became alcoholics quicker. I've heard people in groups talking about, there was a guy I heard in a meeting the other day, it was talking about how his grandmother used to treat his coughs and stuff when he was an infant with whiskey. And I was just like, wow, because, I mean, I didn't really start drinking until I was 12, but I know that I was introduced to beer and champagne and stuff like that at a pretty young age, you know, probably 6-7 years old, you know, probably had my first couple sips.
Yeah, for me, it was after my parents' parties, you know, there would be drinks sitting around, and the ones that did not have cigarette butts, I would polish them off. My little brother also, and we were pretty small, second, third grade. And when you think about the size of a third grader's body, that's a pretty serious damaging effect when you put alcohol in there. And another point that I like to remind parents that if they leave a bottle of Scope around or Listerine, and a baby gets into that and drinks any amount, any significant amount, it'll kill them dead. There's quite a bit of alcohol in Scope, enough to kill a baby for sure.
Yeah, I was just thinking too. I remember when the big crack epidemic exploded in the United States. I remember hearing stuff about these women that were addicted to crack cocaine, that their children were being born already addicted. I wonder if there's any truth to that with alcoholics. You know, we always throw that around in meetings. You know, saying, "Oh, this is hereditary." You know, my grandfather was an alcoholic. My mother was an alcoholic. You know, I have a drunk uncle. You know, things of that nature. But it seems to be all kind of skeptical. You know, kind of hearsay. You know, you kind of assume it, but you know, that usually is the case. You know, in most cases, there's usually a long line of alcoholics. Rarely do I ever encounter somebody that's in the rooms that is an alcoholic, that doesn't have, you know, some line of alcoholics in their family.
That's really true. And the most tragic part is where we see women who drink while pregnant, and then their babies are born with fetal alcohol syndrome, which is a very tragic situation. They have different facial features and learning disabilities, and it's a real tragedy. I think just about everybody knows someone who has a child with fetal alcohol syndrome, or knows someone that does. And the alcohol, the damaging effects of alcohol on a developing fetus is quite severe. It's bad enough when we put alcohol in our system as adults, but as a developing child, it's way more damaging.
I think the shadowy line, when we talk about the shadowy line, is a crossover. You know, we think back on it, but it's where the where it's almost like you have to drink. It's like you've lost the ability to choose. In the program, they say, warning, once you're a pickle, there's no going back to being a cucumber. It's not known by medical science at this time where the line is or how much THIQ an individual brain will pile up before one crosses this line. Some predisposed people cross the line while they're teenagers or earlier. Others cross in their 30s or 40s, and others after retirement. But once this happens, the alcoholic will be as hooked on alcohol as he would have been hooked on heroin if he'd been shooting that instead. With the loss of control, the complex symptoms have become chronic. All aspects of physiology has become progressive and incurable. Now it's clearly a disease. Good news. I'm not trying to get strong. I'm not bad trying to get good. I'm sick trying to get well. Alcoholism is a disease. Alcoholism is not the alcoholic's fault. Alcoholics can get proper treatment from the disease, which begins with telling them these facts. The alcohol can be relieved of guilt. The alcoholic can take on responsibility for arresting their disease. The alcoholic can refuse to put more THIQ in their brains and refuse to activate the THIQ that is already there. Alcoholics can and do recover if they have the capacity to be honest, are willing to clean up the wreckage of the past, and expand their spiritual life. He who conceals his disease cannot be expected to be cured. That's an Ethiopian proverb.
That's really good information, and it's I think if the encouragement is needed. They're doing such a good job now, medical science, of showing that this is a disease much like diabetes or cancer. The person with cancer is not responsible for getting the cancer, but they are responsible to take care of themselves and get treatment, and they can, if they will put forth that effort, they can make the disease go into remission, much like alcoholism. We can make it go in remission if we will do the treatment.
Yeah, this was a good. This is about the end of it. The disease with which the human mind now labors is the want of faith. Ralph Waldo Emerson. For more information, please visit the following links: relationship between heroin, culprit, technical document regarding THIQ, pharmacology and biology, truths, costs, don't facts. How they should I care? Your stories, what you can lose. Let's see, and you would go to Kobe Kemble at Kobe@saw.net, and he has all the clinicals made available and a couple phone numbers, etc., to do that. So if you're interested in a follow up with this, it's it's Kobe@saw.net. So that's the I found this very fascinating. My experience in the program and personal experience, too, is that after about 4 or 5 years, I got real shaky in the program again. and I
Same here.
I, how about you, Oliver? Do you remember or no?
No, I don't recall.
Yeah, for me it was about 5 years. I got real shaky and I didn't know what was going on. It didn't seem like it was really working like it was supposed to, or I didn't know what was going on. I see that now. I'm more aware that 5 to 7 year mark, I believe, is probably because of the THIQ is finally leaving the receptor cells in the brain, and that's probably causing some kind of reaction. I bet you if we did a study, you'd find a lot of drunk dreams come around that time. My experience. I remember that. You, Harold?
And my experience is after 23 years, I still have dreams. And what I've discussed with my sponsors and my doctor is that it's like the safety relief valve on a water heater. It's up there, it'll release excess pressure, and it releases it harmlessly as a dream. In a dream state, it's excess pressure being harmlessly relieved. So now it is disturbing to me when I wake up and I think, oh no, I've ruined my life. Oh, that was only a dream, but still, sometimes it's the feeling spills over into about half my day. But my sponsor said, "Well, it's a safety relief valve. It's okay, but do talk about it. Don't keep it a secret. If you have a drinking dream, talk about it." And give me a call, talk it over, it's just part of good recovery.
Have you had any drinking dreams, Oliver?
Yes, I've definitely had drinking dreams, and what y'all are saying is, what y'all are talking about is really making just crystal clear sense. You know, I don't remember having too many dreams when I was drinking, you know, but I think it's because a lot of the times I would pass out. You know, it wasn't like I laid down like I do today, you know, and then, you know, fall off to sleep. You know, most of the time it was this, you know, alcohol-induced, you know, the thing where I would just pass out. So I don't really remember having too many dreams when I was drinking. And when I got sober, I don't remember a whole lot of physical stuff that was going on. It was mostly the emotional and mental stuff. I really think that they were onto something and were saying more than they knew in the big book when they said, you know, this disease, you know, centers in the mind. Obviously, they didn't have the technology and the scientific know-how to discover this THIQ back in the 30s. But I think they were leading on to more than they actually knew when they said it centers in the mind, because I was just emotionally vacant. You know, I felt pretty much dead to the world. You know, and this went on for, you know, geez, at least 2 months where, you know, I was just kind of going through the motions. And I just wasn't really present in my life, you know, emotionally. I wasn't emotionally available. And, you know, mentally it was just a mess up there. But I do remember my dreams coming back to me in early sobriety and back with a vengeance. And they were very, very vivid dreams. But I don't think it was until I was well into working the steps that I began to have actual drinking dreams. And they too were very vivid. You know, I could taste the alcohol. I would feel the remorse in the dream. You know, I would feel the remorse of having drank and thrown my newfound sobriety away. So, I definitely have experience with drinking dreams. And that's interesting what y'all were saying about, you know, this possibly being an effect of the residual THIQ.
Yes, and what's also happening in the medical field is that they're using electron microscopes to take pictures of the chromosomes and the genes, and they're actually finding that an alcoholic has a different they can't fix the gene, but they can see, oh, there's a different gene in that. In the brain of an alcoholic. So they're seeing it. They can't repair it, but they at least they're seeing it now. And that relates to the THIQ also.
It's funny you were talking about genes. It reminds me of a speaker tape I heard once. This guy said he said that he didn't know if he was born an alcoholic, but the first day he took a drink, an alcoholic was born. And I've always related to that, you know.
Yeah, that is interesting. My experience is that it was like I awakened a sleeping giant, and at that point I couldn't get it to go back to sleep again. I'm stuck with that for the rest of my days on Earth. But if I do certain things, I can get it to go into remission and stay in remission. So in that way, from my experiences, it's a lot like cancer.
Yeah, once you have the disease, it's a disease. There's no doubt about it. There was a movie, and there's always a question in recovery, and it's usually in AA, about being born with the recessive gene of alcoholism. Nothing as of yet has been determined. They see there's something different, but they haven't been able to do. I think eventually the genome will probably, they'll be able to figure this out. But I know American Indians, the Irish for sure, generally, I think over generations of, you know, drinking like that, it causes this allergic reaction. and they seem to be to gather in certain peoples, but I think it's just a preponderance of generations. You know, your grandfather drank and he had a problem, et cetera, et cetera. And some people don't. Now, whether I was born an alcoholic, I always liked alcohol, but I was never really a heavy drinker. There was a movie, it was called The Professionals. Any of you guys remember that? This is some years ago. Ralph Bellamy was in it, and Burt Lancaster, Jack Palance, Claudia Cardinale. Well, they go out into the desert to recapture Claudia Cardinale, who was the wife of Ralph Bellamy. Ralph Bellamy was an old man. He's dead now, I'm sure, a long time ago. And this was this old man with this very young Mexican girl. And it turned out that he's the one who had captured her away. And then these professionals that he hired went to go get them in the desert and come back. And some of the two best lines in the movie, the professionals were going to take her back, and Ralph Bellamy was upset about it, and Lee Marvin was climbing back into the saddle, and Ralph Bellamy looks up at Lee Marvin and goes, he says, "Sir, you're a bastard." And "Sir, in my case, it was an accident of birth, but you, sir, are a self-made man." And I like to think that's how my alcoholism developed and drug addiction, was that I drank hard enough and long enough to develop the allergic reaction to alcohol. Once I developed that allergic reaction, and I think it bears out with the this whole deal on the THIQ, once I built up that residual THIQ and I cross over that shadow line, I'm done. Because for the next 7 years, I've built up that residual to alcohol. So now what the question is how about after the 7 years and the THIQ is now gone? So there's no more THQ. Science says I'm free of the THIQ. Am I still in alcohol?
Well, by the way, for our listeners, this radio show, my experience is about every 5 minutes, Joseph's voice will go into, it sounds like it goes into a cave, it must be the satellite signal, and he'll fade out, and then he'll come back. It takes about 10 seconds. But that's, I think Oliver experienced that, I've been experiencing that, and I don't think Joseph can hear it, but to our listeners, we apologize, and if there's something you want to discuss or hear again, call up, and we'll go over it one more time.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, I don't hear it, but I'm so enamored with my own voice, I wouldn't hear it anyway.
So I love what you said last month. You said so much to say, so few thoughts.
Yeah, I have so many words and so few thoughts.
Yes.
We do have someone. We have a 612. Let's see who this might be. Hello, this is Joseph.
Sarah.
Well, congratulations. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah. How's your show going?
Great, now that you're here.
Awesome. What are we talking about tonight?
Well, we were talking about the, and it's probably something you've never heard before, which was really good. I would listen to this show. It's called THIQ and the Disease of Alcoholism.
Okay.
I'll give you the thumbnail. They've discovered a chemical in the brains of winos, and then since found it in others, the person who drinks alcoholically develops a residual of a chemical called THIQ. And this THIQ, if it's given to, for instance, a rat, some people have a funny time with that, or a monkey, they develop the craving for alcohol. And this THIQ stays in the brain for up to 7 years.
Wow.
And this is, yeah, this is a validated information. I gave out the information how to contact the clinician and the doctor who came up with that concept. But it was that shadowy line, you know, that shadowy line that we cross over as alcoholics.
Yeah.
We're actually, we've lost the ability to choose. And they believe that is because of this chemical of THIQ has built up a residual in the brain. And because of that residual, we have lost we have a choice to drink. We can no longer make a choice whether we can drink or not.
So you think that builds up and then we have no choice, or do you think that alcoholics are born with that?
You know, we were discussing that. I think some people, you know, we just went over that. Some people are born, some people are born genetically predisposed. My experience. You're too, I bet.
Yeah.
First time they took a drink, they remembered that first drink. And I don't care how young they were. They get younger all the time. But no matter what age they were, they take that first drink of alcohol. They remember the sensation. They liked it. They drank alcoholically from their first drink if they could possibly do that. Some people drank so much, like me, I'm a self-made man, I drank so much that eventually I became alcoholic, where I developed the allergy, and according to the information received, you know, from this THIQ, is that this chemical builds up in the brain, but it builds up in the alcoholic because they drink so much, so often, that the residual of THIQ is closely related to a heroin-based drug.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's, I didn't know about it. I'm 15 years sober, and I never heard about it. One of the fellows, one of my co-hosts, sent me the information. It was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, like, where did this come from? It was real interesting how it all washed out. But I believe that's the case. You remember that? You remember that the time when you went from a regular drinker to the point where all of a sudden you realized that you had no choice anymore? Did you? You remember that?
Right, right. I do. And you know, my alcoholism is a little different. Where I wasn't the alcoholic that drank till I was unconscious or blacked out. I was the one that drank every day. And I did that with, you know, drugs, alcohol, almost everything I could. I'm just one of those compulsive people. And so what would happen to me is that I didn't have to drink that much, but if I didn't have it one day, then I panicked. Then I needed it, you know, no matter, and it was growing more and more where, you know, I was just doing anything, it seemed, on a daily basis to just numb all pain, you know, numb anything that I had in me. But it snuck up on me because it was such a slow, it was not a slow progression, but it was just always the same, you know, so I didn't have to progressively get to a point where I was blacking out, but I didn't even realize I was an alcoholic because it was such a normal everyday thing for me. And so, so I don't know, you know, that, you know, talking about this and, you know, that in your brain and stuff, I'm not sure, you know, if that would be my case or not, although I do know that if I didn't have something to numb myself, yes, I needed something. And so even though it wasn't to the – but I guess I don't know if that thing in your brain is something that would make you want to drink to excess every time you drank, because I wasn't at that, you know, point. I mean, I was able to still function. I was a functioning alcoholic where I – just made sure I had some every single day. And, like, if it wasn't that, I had drugs. And if it wasn't that, I gambled or just did something. And for 25 years, I numbed myself out of life completely. So I was a little different case, but and they talk about that in the big book about how there are different types of alcoholics. But the chemical in the brain that, you know, it kind of would be questionable for me then. Because it sounds to me what you're saying is that chemical makes you go to the extreme when you drink, and that you you know, it gets worse and worse. And however, it was progressively getting a little bit worse. You know, it was before where I drink just one or something a day, where it was getting more and more. But I was always able to, you know, like I say, I was it was something that I always, you know, functioned. I didn't go to oblivion every time I did it. So I don't know if that would be a different, you know,
different
for me or a different take on it or not, but that's how my alcoholism worked, and that's how, you know, that's the reason that I had it. Like I say, it took me a while when I got to alcoholics, or when I started realizing, people started telling me that I had a problem. It took me a while to realize I had a problem, because it was such a normal thing for me, and a normal thing meaning I had lived in denial of having a problem, but my life was completely unmanageable. You know, I mean, it's like it got to the point where it was completely unmanageable, but my functioning was not functioning at a pace that I'm functioning today. It was functioning, you know, it was just getting by. But so I don't know, I guess it would be a different take on that chemical. What do you think? Is that something that would be different, or
No, you know, it really doesn't say that. You bring up a good point. It doesn't really mention whether basically what it's saying is that it builds up in the alcoholic, not just the social drinker. So you have to be drinking fairly regularly. They don't know how much, because everybody's different. Everybody's capacity is different.
Right.
I knew, like, this one girl, she was, like, 4'11", and she could put away a liter of, you know, and she, you know, she could drink me under the table twice. I'd be like, where are you putting it, honey? You know, like, it had that kind of capacity. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
So everybody's different. There's no way to tell, but what
I was doing a lot, too. I was not one that would, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So it's not really saying that because now you're going to drink to an oblivious state because more of this is coming in, but it just says at that point, really, you become addicted to alcohol, and that you really lose the choice of it. We all drink, I think, a little differently, and I think that confuses people. They're not an alcoholic because they only drink on the weekends, and they're not an alcoholic because they go sometimes 2 months, 3 months without a drink, but once they start, they binge, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm really not an alcoholic. I could stop anytime. I've stopped for months at a time, but the thing is, when you do drink, you can't, it goes to the oblivion.
Yeah. Well, and that was one of my arguments too, because I would say, well, I don't have to drink every day. And I said, but so just when I want to. And they said, well, what if you didn't drink on those days that you want, or, you know, what would happen if you didn't drink on those days that you really wanted to, you know? And I guess what else happened is that when I was first starting to try to come to grips with being an alcoholic, I had gone through a tragedy, and I had lost my really close person in my life, and I had just started quitting, and I couldn't quite understand why I shouldn't drink that day. And so everybody had always told me, they said, well, when you get that urge, rather than going to the liquor store, you just come to our house, you know, come to a friend's house or go talk to a friend. And so I thought, well, I'll just try that, you know, I'll just do that, even though I don't think I'm an alcoholic, blah, 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 blah. So I went over and I was talking to these friends, and I just said, you know, I see you guys have this problem. You know, I can understand that. Well, yeah, you almost died. You have this, and you have this, and you have this, you know. But I don't understand why I can't drink, because look at, I don't have all that. I don't have, if I drink today, I'll still be okay when my kids get home, but I don't have to drink tomorrow. And they're like, Sarah, do you know what time it is right now? I go, what time? They go, it was 9:30 a.m. Like normal drinkers don't start thinking this way at 9:30 in the morning, honey. And I don't have to really argue about it. I'm like, oh, okay. So maybe
I've never seen this done at this time of night before.
I'm like, it's 9:30 in the morning. I'm telling them, I don't even know why I started coming here, because I don't have the problem. You know, now I have to have the guilt about it, but I didn't have a problem before I had the guilt. you know, just great. So anyway,
right. I didn't become an alcoholic till I started attending AA. You know, like right.
Yeah. When you guys started thinking I was, then I had to be one, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so no, that's all I have though.
Well,
thank
that's an
Oliver. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great point, Sarah, and it's so interesting. I've met so many people whose pattern is different, their level of functioning is different, and the progression of their disease is different. And it's fascinating how slowly it progresses at times, and at other times how quickly it can progress. It really catches a lot of people by surprise, and I'm just fascinated by talking with people who have different things, different rates of progression. Their pattern is different, but the most important part of this is that the solution is the same.
Yeah.
What I had to face is the question, do I need something? Do I need a chemical, a substance? Do I need a substance to cope? Am I dependent on a substance to cope? That was what my sponsor helped me ask myself. He didn't label me. It's just something that I had to make the connection between all these problems and my dependence on substances. And it took me a long time to make the connection.
Right.
Luckily, I lived through it. You know, I didn't do anything extremely stupid. And finally, I could make that connection. But it took me a long time. And I really appreciated the people in the rooms and my sponsor for his patience. The people loved me until I could love myself. I felt bad about a number of things, and I knew the perfect way to punish myself, and that's by drinking and drugging. Making those connections, I really appreciated what Sarah said about they helped her connect the fact that we're talking this way at 9:30 in the morning, you know. And as far as my family's concerned, that was perfectly normal. My parents, you know, there was no time limits when I was growing up. Their favorite thing was, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, I remember. The sun is over the yard arm somewhere. A couple minutes.
Yeah.
Oliver, are you still with us?
Yeah, you know, I just keep thinking about that. You know, the disease centers in our mind, and I really liked hearing from Sarah. You know, talking about she was a different kind of alcoholic. You know, we all drank our certain ways and everything. But you know, like the big book says, you know, there is one similarity, you know, one common denominator in all these different types of alcoholic drinkers, you know, that once we start drinking, we can't, we develop the phenomenon of craving, and that's what separates us from abnormal people. And I was also thinking about the cancer analogy, you know, the fundamental difference between someone that's stricken with, you know, a chronic disease like cancer is also progressive, like alcoholism, is that the cancer patients, I don't think they have this denial that they have, you know, or they don't, I don't think they question that they have cancer, you know, I mean, it's like a proven fact, whereas alcoholics will try to talk themselves out of it, you know. I don't have this problem, you know, what are you talking about? I'm not an alcoholic, I can handle myself, you know, I can handle my drinking.
Really? Well, thank you, Oliver. I wanted to let folks know that if you missed the show or you didn't click on, there's going to be an archive at the Sober Couch Network. Go to Sober Couch Network. Archive of the show will be there. Also on the roomradio.org website, If you click on the captain's table, the disease concept of THIQ and alcoholism is the last post. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And I would suggest taking a look at that. I mean, it's a good read, and it gives you a little heads up on what's going on. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org.
Yeah.
On,